Hello, everyone. It has been truly an embarrassment of riches with interviews lately on Unsinkable. And today is no exception to that. I bring you a talk I had with the actor Cotter Smith, who plays Senator William Alden Smith of the U.S. Titanic Inquiries in the new film Unsinkable. I like their title, Titanic Untold. The film many of you have already heard about, many of you have messaged me about it, is rolling out nationally and internationally over the next couple of weeks. And really, I was so fortunate to see it early so that I could talk to Cotter about his role. He plays Senator Smith, and he and I talk in this interview a lot about how Senator Smith has been portrayed in the Titanic historiography, what his reputation has been in the Titanic story, and how that informed how he played him, how the movie unfolds, and how we view Smith moving forward. Now, Cotter is a renowned actor of 5 decades in theater, film, and television. I'm not kidding. Go to his IMDb page immediately. I will link it in the show notes. You will recognize, I'm sure, as I did, a roster of shows and movies and theater that has meant something to you over the course of your life, I have no doubt. So it was such an honor to speak with him. He's so accomplished. He knows what he's doing. And when he takes on a part, he, you know, dissects the man. And we talk a little bit about that. And we talk about the filmmaking process. Unsinkable is really important in the film canon of Titanic because it is a new Titanic film. It is a Titanic film that is not necessarily about the sinking itself, but the aftermath, which is something we've never had. And I believe the film really asks some historiographical questions. As a historian, I am enamored with. Now, I will be hosting a Q&A in Knoxville, Tennessee, very soon on Friday, April 12th, as part of Unsinkable Titanic Untold's rollout. The film will be showing at the Regal in Knoxville. It is a ticketed event. You do have to go on Regal's website and buy a ticket for this premiere in Knoxville. I will link that in the show notes. Some of the cast and crew are going to be there. This film was a true labor of love for a father-son writing-directing team, for all of the actors involved. Because of COVID, it took apparently, I think, almost 6 years to finish this film and get it in front of our eyes. So I am very excited to meet everybody. If you are close by and you're able to make it to the screening in Knoxville, it's part of really a whole weekend of Titanic anniversary events that I'm part of in Knoxville and Pigeon Forge and with the Titanic Museum attraction. So check the show notes for all of that info. And in the meantime, just enjoy this really wonderful, laid back, but important, and I think very prescient discussion with Cotter. Thank you, Cotter, for coming on the podcast and taking the time. It was lovely to meet you. I'm LA Beatles, and this is Unsinkable, the Titanic podcast. And yeah, just enjoy this conversation. It's fantastic. Talk soon, you guys. Perfect. All right. Cotter Smith, welcome to Unsinkable. It's a huge pleasure. And I'm just so excited to talk to you about the film. I want to say too that, you know, I was looking at your resume online and you're just such an accomplished film and theater and TV actor. And I think that listeners are going to be very excited to get to hear from you. It's just an honor to be able to speak with you. So thanks for taking the time today.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Of course. I want to start with just, you know, you have a very accomplished career, obviously, and you've worked, like I said, in film and theater and television. You've had a myriad experiences all across the board. How did you, I did take a peek at your Wikipedia, you know, just in prep for the interview, and I see you used to be a teacher, which is incredible too. How did you come around to your, to acting? If you wouldn't mind giving people a little bit of a bio so they can get, you know, a sense of who you are and your acting journey and kind of how you came to love what you love.
It's an interestingly different story for me. I'm not one of those kids who always wanted to be an actor. Never occurred to me. Was not on my radar. I didn't grow up loving theater or movies or anything. I wanted to be a teacher. My degree was in English literature, and I was going to be a teacher and a writer. And I accidentally fell into the theater in college and ended up doing a play unexpectedly. And I had one of those moments you hear a lot of actors talk about. While doing it, I just had this feeling that I was, it sounds hokey, I felt home. I felt something happening between the audience and me, some communication that I had never felt before, that just, it moved me. And I fell in love with it. So I did a lot of it in college. I did not become a theater major. I stayed literature major, but I did a dozen plays, and I really buried myself in it because I loved it so much. But even when I graduated, it didn't occur to me to be an actor. That was not, I didn't have any sense of, oh, this is my life. I thought that was really fun. And mm-hmm. So I went off and I was a teacher in a secondary school and for a while. And then I bounced around doing some things, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. When I realized secondary school teaching was not for me, and I wasn't yet ready to teach university. And once again, I fell into a play accidentally. Mm-hmm. And I did that play, and I thought, I think it's time for me to figure out if this is something I should pursue. So I decided
it kept pulling you in. The universe kept knocking on your door in that way. Yeah.
So I thought, okay, this sounds crazy, but I'm going to try. I'm going to spend a few years and just see what I think. So I was in my hometown of Washington, D.C., and I started doing plays in little theaters. And I did it for a couple of years, and I confirmed that I really did love it. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to New York. And I'm going to go to New York, and I'll give myself mm-hmm. a couple of years. And I'll see how it goes. And I went to New York. And within a couple of years, I was working. I wasn't making any money, but I was doing plays. Mm-hmm. And I was working off Broadway, and then I was working off Broadway. And then all of a sudden, a play that I did in New York won the Pulitzer Prize and took me to Los Angeles. And that play put me in a TV movie playing Robert Kennedy. And all of a sudden, I was an actor. I was working. Mm-hmm. And I still don't understand how that happened. It just, one thing just happened after another. And I still teach, but I teach acting now, and I spend a lot of time talking to my students about how you can't plan your future. You just have to live your day by day mm-hmm. interests. And I almost feel like where you go as an actor isn't up to you. It unfolds as you follow your passion. And I've been doing it for 50 years, so I've been extremely lucky.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was looking down your list of credits, and it almost read like it was like going down memory lane for me yeah. of shows that I've loved over the years, you know, and I think, too. Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible. You've gotten a chance to work with so many amazing people in yeah. all of these different forms and getting to teach it as well. What, you know, heading into the role of Senator Smith, What drew you to Unsinkable? Obviously, I'm sitting here in the Titanic. You don't have to tell me twice, you know, how the Titanic story just is enthralling and beautiful. And there's so much to unpack and unfurl. But for you specifically, when you thought about taking this role and it came to you, what sort of sparked in you in terms of playing Senator Smith? Was it different in some way from other? I mean, it, you know, obviously you've played many people, some historical, some fiction, but what stood out to you when you considered that character?
For me, it always starts with the story. I actually feel more like I'm a storyteller than an actor. There's something about telling a story that is so primitive. I mean, the theater, I love the theater so much because it feels like sitting around a fire and telling a story to a group of people in a room. Film is different than that, but it still does go back to the story. And if the story feels worthwhile to be told and important to hear, that's a hook for me. Mm-hmm. And this story grabbed me right away. It grabbed me because, first of all, I think it's an important historical point in our history as a country. I mean, this is 1912, this film. But the Senate investigation has such a resonance today. And so the similarities made it for me a really interesting story to tell. And this man, a really interesting guy to figure out, why was he so committed to this story? Why did mm-hmm. he stay? And I think change over the course of pursuing the case, the character became interesting to me. And then beyond that, I met the producer and the director and the team, and I sort of fell in love with them. So then the whole package was there. It just looked like this was a match.
And I should mention, I have been fortunate to see the film already. I was very fortunate to get a screener of it and be able to see it a little early. So, you know, I could talk to you and I've seen your performance, which is incredible, by the way. And I, you know, my question would be in response to that, I have read a few articles about the whole production and the team. And I know it's been a very dedicated and long process to bring this film to fruition. And yeah. So if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about that, I want to talk more about Smith and we'll get there and your specific performance of him. But what was the making of this like? I know it's been a passion project for the writer directors. I, you know, if you can walk us through what it was like to bring, obviously not necessarily Titanic to life, because this film is about what happens after, but where did you guys film? What was the sort of feeling on set in telling this very somber but very important story? If you could give us a sense of what filming was like.
Yeah, it was an endless process. The filming itself took 6 years.
No.
And of course, it was interrupted by the pandemic, which added almost 2 years. But even so, they worked on it for years before we even started filming. So for them, it's even longer. Mm-hmm. But from my point of view, it was 6 years of my life in and out. Trying to get this film made. Very difficult film to make. It's set in 1912. The entire thing was shot in Pittsburgh, which I find fantastic. Pittsburgh is my new home. I moved here 8 years ago. My wife and I came here. I was cast in a Netflix show called Mindhunter.
Yeah.
Project. And we came to Pittsburgh from Manhattan and immediately fell in love with it and decided to move here. So we've been here ever since.
Wow. Okay.
And I met the producer of this film in an elevator in Pittsburgh. That's how I, again, accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Best things in life. Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
We got to talking. He sent me the script. Then we met. As soon as I read it, I knew I was interested. One thing led to the next. And being locally in Pittsburgh, I was around for a lot of the preparation before we started filming. And I was going into mm-hmm. the office, meeting the co-producers, and we just became, I became a little bit part of the team, which was just a family feel, if I, you know, not to be, you know, pokey about it, but it didn't feel like a big Hollywood production. It felt like what it is, which is a local, homegrown, independent film. The entire thing was shot in Pittsburgh.
Which is crazy, because there are shots in this film that do not look like Pittsburgh. It's really like, especially at the Inquiry, I mean, you get a sense that you're in New York in these, you know, magnificent buildings that are so iconic to the city there. And that, I mean, that's just one point. Recreating 1912 and doing it in Pittsburgh. I mean, and I will say the film, I know it's a labor of love and it is an independent film, but it doesn't look it. It looks polished and, you know, it has the production qualities of a mainstream film. It looks beautiful. The lighting is gorgeous. And, you know, it has a very polished sense about it. So that even more so drives home how hard everybody worked, you know, taking the scenario that you lay out and then this is the finished product. That's quite impressive. Yeah. So
it does look like it costs a lot more money to make than it
It does.
Partly, that's because Pittsburgh is a very old city. And it's very easy to recreate 1912 because the buildings are here.
Yeah, to get that particular aesthetic. Yeah.
Hines Hall stands in for the Waldorf Astoria, and it's a period building. And there are many of those in Pittsburgh. So that was...
That part was probably not too hard. Yeah.
The court buildings here and everything... It was easy to find buildings that were age appropriate.
And did you read the inquiries? And I ask that as someone who, and I wouldn't wish this upon anybody, but I have read them page cover to cover, I should say, every single page. It took a long time.
Endless.
You know, I'm glad I did, because I find myself, you know, if it's specific research I'm working on, or if I'm interviewing somebody, whatever it is within Titanic, I'm constantly going back to that because it is really one of our main, obviously primary sources. Did you read some of it? How did you prep for becoming Senator Smith? Was that part of it? Was there anything else? What's kind of your method to get into character in that situation?
Well, the first thing I try to do with any character that I'm trying to figure out, because obviously I know nothing at the beginning, is I call it, who is he when he's at home? So my task, I feel, is to find who the man is inside the senator. Who is he as a spirit and a soul instead of just a mouthpiece for the inquiry, for example, which is pretty much all you see is him pleading his case and cross-examining his case. But what I found through the script and through reading about him was that he was a very politically driven senator. He had dreams of the White House. He was sort of in the pipeline. He was ambitious. He was aggressive. And I think he initially felt that this was a career-making proposition. Turned out to be exactly the opposite for him, because as he pursued it, he became, in my reading of it, changed by it, moved by it, very upset by it, disturbed by it. And he started pushing beyond where President Taft was comfortable going. And history repeats itself. The Senate inquiry was squashed. It was shut down. He was unable to complete it. He continued to interview immigrants even after it was shut down, just because he had become so emotionally involved in it. And one of the things that I think the writers did so wisely was they wrote a scene toward the end of the film where the senator practices his summation to the Senate in front of his wife in their home.
played by Karen Allen. Played by Karen the way. Allen. Yeah.
Old friend of mine.
Oh, that's amazing.
Karen and I met in our 20s in Washington, D.C.
Had you ever worked together before, or was this the first time?
We worked together then.
And now.
Other sense, but not often. We didn't stay really in touch much, but we'd cross paths occasionally. Mm-hmm. And when I saw her name on the list for my wife, I contacted her and said, I'm doing this and I would love it if you'd come. And I think almost as a fun reunion favor.
Yeah.
Do it. And
yeah.
It adds a great deal to my scenes with my wife, I'll tell you that, because there's such affection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's great.
Between us, that it was very easy to create a couple,
mm-hmm.
a meaningful couple, which I thought was also important for the senator. But again, it made a lot of sense to me that the arc of the senator's journey in the film is that dropping of his political side and following his human side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the film really shows that at the end, his final speech.
It does.
It's that to me was what drew me to the character. And I think we did achieve that in the film.
I agree. And, you know, listeners will know this from when I've mentioned Senator Smith before, you know, in the Titanic historiography, he unfortunately often gets a very short mention and a very bad rap. And it's because of it turns on one pivot point, which drives me crazy, which is you will hear a lot of Titanic people say, oh, well, if you read through the inquiries, the questions that he's asking come off as someone who doesn't know things of the sea, right? That he's not a sailor. He has no naval experience, and that he's asking these very simplified questions. What is an iceberg? What, you know, how does a ship work, basically? And they take that and then they expand out to say, well, he was an idiot and he didn't know what he was doing. I've always fundamentally disagreed with taking that one piece of evidence and pulling out on Smith, because actually there's another reading of that first before we even consider the film you're in. The other reading of that is that he wanted the notes from the inquiry to be incredibly detailed and for these simple questions to be asked so that anybody reading it or listening would be able to discern and understand. And there's right. Nothing wrong with that. But also that he's such a complex person and there's so much more to his story than that. And he was very passionate about this inquiry. And I think the film really, you know, whether it was intentional or not, really completely upends the historiography of Senator Smith 100%, which I think needs to be done, opens up as a historian, a really intriguing conversation for me. But it's very evident in the film that you guys could see that journey within him. And he's not one note at all. He's many, many notes, which is incredible because even a lot of academic histories about Titanic, you know, written by researchers will portray him as very one note when it comes to the inquiry.
I completely agree. And it is a bad rap, because when you read the inquiry in complete, total understanding of it, yes, he was not aware of many of the maritime world. He was not a seaman. He did not know anything
he
about
just,
that.
That he wasn't where his expertise was.
He was actually asking things that needed to be understood by everybody. He wanted to know why the temperature of the water was tested when, why that mattered, what did that indicate about the icebergs? They were all questions that, if you follow the inquiry, led to very important points about the sinking of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, without Senator Smith and without this inquiry, many of the maritime laws that were changed wouldn't have happened. I mean,
no,
the inquiry really spurred a massive reconstruction of maritime law.
that we live with today. I mean, things like the ICE patrol in the North Atlantic, things like safety measures and lifeboat counts on ships that we still encounter today. And, you know, it's often, I see this so much in everything I've ever studied, really, no matter the geography or the time I'm looking at. Oftentimes, people that are right there at the forefront or on the cusp of something and really trying to make a point or make a difference or really investigate something, they're often not the most understood people in our history books, you know? And I think and to me, that's what I'm interested in. I mean, my listeners know this. I am more interested in people's complexities and even failure than I am necessarily their successes or their happy glowing moments where they're smiling in a picture. That's not really what I'm after, because I think every human being is not black, not white, very gray. Was there anything, I mean, how much did you know about Titanic before this? And what going, you know, as you prepared for the role and as you shot the film, was there anything you learned that you just were sort of floored by? Like coming into this project and learning so many details about the inquiry, especially, what was your kind of pre-film Titanic experience and how did that change in terms of how you thought about the sinking?
My pre-film Titanic experience was very small. It was what many people's would be. I knew of it. I read about it. But I didn't have any specific knowledge of anything. So it was fascinating to read all of these things. And they were all rather, the inquiry alone was just eye-popping to me, mm-hmm. discoveries. To just follow up on what we were just talking about, I love the fact that he's not a hero. It's not a story about a hero who mm-hmm. comes and saves the day. He was a human being in a very complicated situation and in a very tight spot politically, who lost his career because of this, but pushed through anyway. Just a man who sort of got mangled by the system, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. He was trying to do what was right. He becomes a fall guy, really, in the Titanic story, similar to Bruce Ismay, who's in the movie as, you know, Ismay is featured. Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. And so, and also we get to see a lot of people in the Titanic story that only Titaniacs or, you know, Titanic researchers would know about, people like Arthur Peuchen. You know, I know about him. My listeners probably do, because I put all this minutia in my episodes, but the average person would never know those stories at all.
And Lightoller and Bride and mm-hmm. you know, the names of, they're so beautifully done in the film, I think.
We see these people come to life. These people have been dead for many years, but they live. I mean, to see some of them that aren't normally given, you know, that weren't given screen time in, say, the 1997 movie, you know, it is amazing to see a face and see a person come to life through, in this movie, their own words, because this is based on actual testimony. Yeah.
It's so moving to hear these wonderful actors and all of those guys in the inquiry that I cross-examine are just, mm-hmm. I was really struck by every one of them in terms of humanity.
The acting is incredible, and the characters that are spotlighted, you know, the historical figures, I should say, that are spotlighted. It's a very good sort of array of the different people that were on board. You don't normally get that kind of representation. And I mean, many of your scenes do play out as a kind of a courtroom drama. Yep. And so, how was that? I imagine that's probably pretty intense to film. Is that, because I mean, I would say the majority of your scenes, you're grilling somebody or you're, you know, it's, I imagine that's got to be quite tiring in a good way.
It was tiring in a good way. Yeah.
Yeah.
more tiring than usual, because generally the inquiry is about 30 pages long of the script, 30 out of 90 pages of the script. It's a long mm-hmm. section of the script. And, you know, on a film, you'll generally do between 3 and 6 pages a day. You're lucky if you get that. We only had the location, which was Heinz Hall, which was, as I said, standing in for the Waldorf Astoria, where the inquiry took place, for 2 days.
Oh my God.
To do the inquiry, which was the last thing we shot.
Oh my gosh. Nobody slept, it doesn't sound like.
So it was a very intense two days, 16-hour days. I don't even know what the word is. I don't think we believe we would get it done.
Mm-hmm.
We're just working against the clock. But somehow the pressure cooker of it sort of suited the moment.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty thrilling moment when we realized we're going to make it. We're going to actually.
And you did. I mean, and you would never know it watching the film. It looks like you leisurely had these spaces to do whatever you needed to do. Yeah. You guys have been on a Titanic tour. You were over in the UK and Ireland. And so what's that been like to, you know, and again, this has been a long process. You started shooting your scenes 6 years ago, you said. So yeah. I imagine in your brain, this is like an era of your life now. So what has it been like to present this to Titanic people? I mean, I've been seeing some of the stories pop up on Instagram and such. I know a lot of Descendants, a lot of, you know, Titanic researchers, a lot of just Titaniacs are coming to these screenings. What's it been like to take this out into the Titanic world, so to speak?
Surprisingly personal and emotional. Sort of unexpectedly. I knew that there would be, obviously, in Belfast, where the ship was built, I knew the connection. I mean, we knew there would be descendants there whose, you know, forebears worked on the boat, helped build this incredible ship. And they were there, and they were extremely quiet during the screening. And I wasn't sure what that meant, because it's a tough film in a way. The inquiry is aggressive and the inquiry is accusatory of the White Star Line and of, you know, there are a lot of ways it can be received. And we were very pleasantly surprised at how much they appreciated, as they put it, that it wasn't a spectacular action film. That it wasn't a Hollywood extravaganza, that it was a story about the Titanic, that it was a personal story about the Titanic.
And data. And I mean, it's not often you see films go directly to source material like that. You know, it's really a history lesson within a film in a unique way that you don't see very often anymore.
Yeah. When I read it, I thought, I don't think this is a film for everyone. It's not a love story. It's not an action story.
That's true. It's not, there's no love story at there's the no center. There's, the yeah, Titanic. It's, you really have to want to dig into this specific Titanic story, but a lot of people do. A lot of people want to do that. Yeah.
And the Belfast audience was so, there were a lot of tears. Personally, they came up to us afterwards and just wanted to tell their story of who they knew and how much they appreciated our coming there, which was why we went, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew we were taking the film to them, and that in a way, it's why the movie was made, because we wanted to honor and respect those who lost so much.
It was bringing it home in a way. I mean, you know, it's like the building of Titanic Belfast was Titanic's sort of homecoming, I think, in a metaphorical way for the city. And so the same with you guys bringing this film, it's, you know, recognizing that this was the birthplace of it and that the representation of it can kind of, you know, it is like a homecoming, I feel like.
And then after Belfast, we had a screening in London, which was extremely different because it was a lot of actors and directors and arts people, totally different audience, who really just wanted to talk about the filmmaking and all of that. And then we went to Southampton, which is where the ship took off from. And that was even more emotional, if that was possible, because there we had so many people whose descendants were on the ship.
Oh, yeah.
Either descendants of crew people.
Crew.
Or passengers.
Yeah.
And that was, it was overwhelming. They really stayed afterwards to talk about Grandpa and Grandma. And again, they were very appreciative that we were there. There was an embrace. We felt a very personal embrace from them, which was a pleasant surprise.
I think it's wonderful because it's recognition. You know, I say on the podcast, and I also say in my real life, I say this to my kids because I take them to historical cemeteries all the time, and they're 7 and 9, and I don't know, maybe they'll need therapy later but you know, we'll take walks through them, and we'll just look at, you know, at the stones, and we'll read people's names that we have no connection to, you know, from 1821 or whatever it may be. But I always tell them, you know, when you speak someone's name and you talk of them, you bring them back to life. People stay alive when you speak their name, when you talk about them. And that's what a cemetery is, right? It's a way to remember people and keep them alive. And I imagine that the descendants feel the same way, that it's so beautiful to see not only some of the passengers and crew portrayed, but to have the recognition, whether they lost, you know, their relative on board, or whether the relative survived. Either way, it's you feel validation, you feel recognition, you feel like your family is a part of this bigger, important thing, and they are. And I imagine that is a really emotional experience for the descendants.
Yep.
And we'll, you know, this episode is being released with promoting the screening in Knoxville, which you're going to be there, right? In Knoxville?
I am. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll get to meet in person and talk some more. And I'm very excited to see it on the big screen because I've only seen it on a screener on my laptop. So I'm excited. I imagine it very much is. And, you know, just to sort of round out the conversation, what do you think, if someone is heading into seeing this film, and maybe they know a good bit about Titanic, obviously, if they're listening to my show, they probably do. What would you tell them to sort of be on the lookout for? You know, obviously what we've talked about with Senator Smith, but what would you say is sort of, you know, one of the themes or takeaways from this film? If someone, you know, has been a Titanic person and wants to look at the story in some new ways, what are just some final thoughts you'd love to share for someone, almost as a primer? You know, a lot of people listening to this are going to be heading into seeing the movie soon. Just any, you know, closing thoughts to share with folks about the film itself?
For me, and it's very individual for everyone, I'm sure, when they see a film like this, but when I look at it again, I see a very interesting example of history repeating itself. Mistakes that are made that come back to haunt you. I mentioned earlier the Senate investigation that was basically ignored. I don't think I've met anyone, when I explain that the film is about the 1912 Senate investigation into the sinking of the Titanic, who doesn't say what?
Exactly. Most people don't even know. Yeah.
Don't even know.
If they're not a Titanic person, they don't even know this exists. Yeah.
Which is amazing to me. And it just makes you wonder how in 50 years, what will we have forgotten from today?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was sitting down and watching the movie, sometimes I think it's just me. Every single movie I watch, whether it's like a comedy with my children all the way up to, you know, the most serious of documentaries, I am always aware in my mind of what threads of something are kind of about history repeating itself, or some sort of warning that we can take in the present. And sometimes I think it's just me. And so I'm always asking people around me if they're getting the same thing. But yeah, now that you mention it, I think it's a really important part of this film. And I was thinking about it when I was watching it, that the soul of this movie is about an investigation, which right. is so important to represent every single bit of a story as best you can, to provide data and information and expertise. That, you know, they're the interviews with the crew, it's about their expertise. It's about mining all the information that he could at that moment to try to figure out what happened. And it's such an important process. And you're right. I think there are many ways in which the world today needs to be reminded what an important process that is. And so I think in that way, it's a very timely film, as Titanic just always continues to resonate. And this is in a new way, I think.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, this has just been lovely. I'm so thrilled that you took the time to come on Unsinkable. And like I said, I mean, I was a little nervous to meet you, because I've seen a lot of your work, and I'm a fan, and your performance in this movie is incredible. And of course, as we spoke about, you have just such a long and wonderful career. So I encourage people to watch other things that you've been in, and explore your filmography, because it's so impressive. And it's just such a delight to get to meet you.
Great to meet you. And I'll see you in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Yeah. Yes. I know. I was talking to the museum the other day, and they've got a lot of stuff lined up. So it's going to be fun. I look forward to it.